Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Human trafficking. Modern slavery. It's an abhorrent reality in much of the third world. One of the truly awful aspects, and truthfully, it's all heartbreaking, but one of the truly awful aspects is the drafting of children to become child soldiers. Primary school-aged children are given weapons and sent into the front lines of combat. Now, that often happens in the context of guerrilla warfare, and apart from the risk that they're maimed or killed, there is, of course, long-lasting psychological impact if they survive. These children, 7 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, they're witness to and even made to participate in unimaginable violence. Cho is a very brave woman from the Philippines who works in partnership with the Freedom Project to provide a way out of human trafficking and child soldiering for the children, and because of hope-filled development work in their communities, she's having a massive impact on the way those communities think about their neighbours. Cho told me about the first child soldier she met, a boy growing up in the Abu Sayyar extremist group in Mindanao in the Philippines.
His father actually trained him at the age of 7 and how to assemble a gun, and then at the age of 8, disassemble with blindfolded. And then at the age of 12, he was actually exposed already to getting crossfire, like really killing people, exposing him to that one. So at the age of 14, he was employed and basically as an assassin.
So there's a level of deliberateness about what you've just told us. This sounds like it was a training program as such.
It was his father who actually belonged to that group. And so he literally grew up exposed in this kind of an environment. They're now called as, or categorized as a terrorist group in the Philippines.
Yes. Yeah. It's hard to imagine a father treating his son like that. I just can't fathom it.
I'm only talking to just one extremist group that has been categorized as a terrorist group in the Philippines. But then the other groups that we're really working with basically grew up in that culture of violence because their parents are also working in the military. It's a militant group also, which is a paramilitary group.
All right. So, and you don't want to be too specific about it, but you're saying that this is a place where, whether you're in an extremist group or not, violence is all around you. It's part of your culture. And is there an expectation then that young boys will become child soldiers?
And for most of them, they actually want to volunteer. I mean, they're not forced, and like the ones in Myanmar, where we also work with a community where children are actually conscripted and become a property of the state. I won't have to say which military group it is. But then, like if you are a family with 5 kids, they can just go to your house, get 2 of your kids and train them in the camp. And, you know, that's immediately they become like their property. And they can serve there for 15, 20 years right in the army.
Well, assuming they survive that ordeal, they're certainly not the same as they were when they were taken, are they?
Right. So it's completely different from that one in the southern Philippines, because it's part of a cultural thing where the kids are exposed to this, and so they themselves are trying to fight for self-determination as a community.
Yep.
And so they actually, most of them would want to be part of the army, even if they don't get paid. Yep. But other groups, like the extremist groups or the terrorist groups, get to pay as part of their bribery to these kids.
What do the international laws say about involving children in that way?
Well, the Philippines and Myanmar are both signatories to the UN Convention of the Rights of Children.
Yeah.
But in reality, they still do use kids a lot.
What can be done? What are you doing, Cho, with your group that can bring us some hope?
Ours is not the traditional way where most of the international NGOs would actually come and try to rescue them out of the situation and bring them out of their community, out of their culture. Ours is actually working within the community where they are in. So we try to work with their leaders. It's different. Like in Mindanao, we actually get to, in one of our areas, get into the camp, you know, offer them education, like educational assistance. So one of the areas, the only closest school that they have in the community is a private Muslim school. And so we offered for them to be able to get to school. So in that way, these kids who were once in the military camp are now actually being, you know, in school for about three years now. We are on the third year of this program. Because in other areas, we've worked for 5 years already. Hmm. But for this Muslim community, it's been doing very well. So we try to bring them out of a culture of violence by allowing them to get to school. And then we do have family visitations. We provide them values education where they get exposed to our peace modules. So somehow you're trying to inculcate values of a culture of peace. And, you know, other skills of trying to resolve conflicts in a nonviolent way.
I'm really interested to know how that works in practice. When you look at something that's as ingrained for these paramilitary groups that you're speaking of and for people who see themselves as fighting for their own self-determination, so they have an ideologically driven, emotionally driven response that for them, it seems normal for their boys to be involved. But how do you combat that with short-term projects? What's the argument that cuts through, or what are the incentives that you can provide?
Because for one, when you try to meet the felt need of the community, like even the parents themselves, they do have dreams of their children, and they do want them to get education as well as part of their basic social need. But then for many of them, they are also living under poverty. So as much as they would want to send their kids to school, they could not afford it. Mm. And so when like an organization like us would offer, then that is something that they would immediately grab. And so that's the starting point. You try to meet the felt need of that, you know, the people that you're trying to reach out. And then once you meet that need, then they begin to open up their hearts and their homes. So we get to have the chance to be able to visit them in their, you know, with their families, get to hear their stories. And that's when you also begin to, since we also require them to undergo our sessions, which we had a partnership with the school, they allow us actually an hour every week to be able to spend time with all our scholars.
Yes.
And so we get to instill those values. And yeah, the kids are actually somehow growing in a very positive way. In fact, one of our kids in another Muslim community, two of them actually are, it's like a son and a daughter of a militant leader in the area. And they're actually very influential. But then when they got into this, it's like a tri-people community where there are Christians and there are Muslims and then there are also indigenous peoples. In 6 months, it was quite amazing. We actually saw how it impacted the lives of these two kids because they were not only doing well in their studies, they actually got to represent the school at the district level.
Yeah.
And so it brought so much pride to their families.
Yes.
And every time they get back to their home, like their parents are actually amazed that they become so responsible. They, you know, they become respectful to their parents. And so they see a lot of this changes. And out of that, the other neighboring communities actually requested for us to increase, if possible, if we could actually extend our program to other, you know, kids
yes.
who also dream of having an education as well.
We're speaking on Open House to Cho. Cho is with the Freedom Project. She's based in the Philippines. She works in that Thai-Myanmar border area and releasing children from child slavery, including the slavery of being involved in civil war. Cho, it's, what you just said is really profound, and it says essentially that even if you're involved in a long-standing conflict, and many of the conflicts that you're looking at go back decades, if not centuries, even if you're involved in that, once somebody is, well, you call it meeting their felt need, but it's allowing their dreams for their kids to come to the fore and to see that there is a possibility for those children, an economic possibility and a hope and a future, that will overcome hate. That's profoundly biblical, isn't it?
Yes. We have seen, like, you know, like changes in just a matter of like months. You're talking about like 6-7 months for those kids. But for others, there's also like just in 2 years' time that kids would begin to ask, you know, the missionaries on the ground would just, they would say, why are you so good to us? Why are you doing this? And that gave them such a great opportunity to just begin to share the good news. And so that's how it goes with the rest. So it's not like a short-term, you know, like solution. But then for others, we've seen some miracles. I, in fact, had an opportunity to just pray over for one girl. You know, she worked with a local army as well, a paramilitary group. And then in one meeting, I just had the chance to just interview her a little bit and then prayed for her need. And just right after that prayer, she you can tell how she was so touched by it. And then 3 days after, when I got back home, I received an email from her that she actually decided to leave the army and started a new life in Manila, back in the metro, where she, you know, she did not graduate in a very prestigious university in the country because she joined the army.
Yes.
And then, you know, she got married to a tribal person and then lived with the army for like more than 5 years. And that with that meeting alone, that changed her life. And I felt like, wow, that for me was so like, this is something that was new to me because, you know, we've been working with a lot of children at risk. But then that moment, just after you pray for that person and you know, the Holy Spirit just touches that person and can change her dramatically.
How amazing. What a wonderful, wonderful story. And do people like her and others, the young boys who you talking to going to school or you convinced to go to school rather than going into the army, do they face consequences? Do their families face consequences?
Oh, no. Actually, in that area, because, remember, they're trying to fight for self-determination.
Yes.
And a lot of those, actually, they're driven because of economic poverty.
Right.
Government somehow has neglected them as a, you know, as a community. And so when you give them, the basic services, then they feel like, wow, you have cared for them. And so that really opened up their hearts. And I think that's really key in our strategy in there. Just trying to be able to express compassion and just being able to meet that felt need of theirs. And then when they begin to open, that's when you just go for it. Just help them have a change of mindset. That's really our goal. It's really a change of mindset and a change of value system, because it's deeply rooted, right, in their, you know, in their value system as part of their culture and as a community at that.
And it's what you just said is a wonderful illustration of why we mustn't let people just look at a whole group of individuals, a community, an oppressed people group, and say, oh, they're all just bad. It's in their nature. They'll fight forever. Mm-hmm. It's not that. What you've said is that actually this is an inappropriate response to some real needs. And those needs are best met with love and with hope and economic opportunity.
Right. True.
How can people assist you in what you do, Cho?
We have different kinds of ways, actually, that you can support the projects in our areas where we work with. And one of those can be like even in the, you know, the skills that you have. Like some people come there and just provide these kids with training so that they become also sustainable, because there's not a lack. There's not a lot of economic opportunities in the areas that we work. It's actually remote that they do not have access to a lot of, you know, jobs. And so, like, for example, in the community up in the remote mountains in northern Mindanao, there's like, this is like a tribal community. And, you know, it's really in the jungles. Like, so it's up in the mountains.
Yes.
And so, in short, what we saw the opportunity in there for them so that they can actually thrive is for them to help develop their, you know, farming skills. And so we connected them, gave them access to government, and they're now actually doing it. They're getting resources from government, and we, you know, some people would also just go there, provide them some basic health training skills. And so these people also learn some basic stuff. So you can also, you know, you're not only just lending your skills, but you can also support financially, of course, to help get kids to school, you know. get access to education. And you can actually just log on to our website at www.thefreedomproject.org to be able to learn other ways of being able to support our projects.
Here's the way. Yes, here's the way I see it. God's given plenty of gifts, plenty of skills for us to use, and we use them for our own families and our own country, and that's absolutely appropriate that we do that. We have excess capacity that God's given us in His great economy, both skills and time and energy and financial resources, and we have the opportunity to make a real difference through organizations like yours, thefreedomproject.org. Thank you so much, Cho, for telling us your stories, and thank you for what you do.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Cho from the Freedom Project, and there's another story that tells us just this. You make a difference in this world when you are able to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to life in communities that haven't heard it or need to hear it, or lives who need to hear it most. And what an interesting revelation to know that even in those guerrilla-fighting, freedom-fighting groups who are fighting a civil war, I mean, you can... You would be wrong to just characterize that as just bad people, as I said to Cho during that interview. Even in those communities, with everything on the line, their sense of nationalism in many cases, their religion in other cases, their sense of self-identity, and decades, if not longer, of enmity between people groups, with all of that going on, you go into the community and you say, you know what, your kids could go to school. They could get a job. They could be free of all of this. That starts to turn people around. And you say, we're here serving because of Jesus. That turns people around. What a great story. It's been a very interesting night of learning from that point of view about love, God's love in action. We might have even based this on the book of James. No, we didn't, but we could have.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.